The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everything I did would have been done privately in the normal course. We have great conversation in the FBI and prosecutors. We make recommendations. We argue back and forth. What I decided to do was offer transparency to the American people about the whys of that, what I was going to do, because I thought that was very, very important for their confidence in the system of justice. And within that, their confidence in the FBI. And I was very concerned if I didn't show that transparency, that in that lack of transparency, people would say, geez, what's going on here? Something seems squirrely here. And so I said, I will do something unprecedented because I think this is an unprecedented situation. Now, the next director who is criminally investigating one of the two candidates for president may find him or herself bound by my precedent. Okay, so if that happens in the next 100 years, they'll have to deal with what I did. So I decided it was worth doing.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, July 9th, 2016. FBI Director Jim Comey faced the Oversight and Government Reform Committee this week to discuss his decision in the Clinton email probe. And the hearing was actually riveting. Trouble was, it was endless. A lot of speechifying, windy members, repetitive questions, 5 long hours. But don't worry, folks, we got you covered. We hacked it way down. Just the questions, just the answers, no repetition, none of the loquacious congressional narcissism, none of the long speeches with a fake question at the end, none of the irrelevant lines of questioning, and there were a bunch of those. All the drama and all the valuable stuff in that hearing in 90 short minutes. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 178, Comey versus the Committee, and No Bull.
Physically, where were Hillary Clinton's servers?
The operational server was in the basement of her home in New York. The reason I'm answering it that way is sometimes after they were decommissioned, they were moved to other facilities, storage facilities, but the live device was always in the basement.
Was that an authorized or unauthorized location?
It was an unauthorized location for the transmitting of classified information.
Is it reasonable or unreasonable to expect Hillary Clinton would receive and send classified information?
As Secretary of State, reasonable that the Secretary of State would encounter classified information in the course of the Secretary's work.
Via email?
Sure, depending upon the nature of the system. To communicate classified information would have to be a classified rated email system.
But you did find more than 100 emails that were classified that had gone through that server, correct?
Right, through an unclassified server, correct.
Yes. So Hillary Clinton did come to possess documents and materials containing classified information via email on these unsecured servers, correct?
That is correct.
Did Hillary Clinton lie?
To the FBI? We have no basis to conclude she lied to the FBI.
Did she lie to the public?
That's a question I'm not qualified to answer. I can speak about what she said to the FBI.
Did Hillary Clinton lie under oath?
Not to the FBI, not in a case we're working.
Did you review the documents where Congressman Jim Jordan asked her specifically? And she said, quote, there was nothing marked classified on my emails, either sent or received, end quote.
I don't remember reviewing that particular testimony. I'm aware of that being said, though.
Did the FBI investigate her statements under oath on this topic?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think there's been a referral from Congress.
Do you need a referral from Congress to investigate her statements under oath?
Sure do.
You'll have one. You'll have one in the next few hours. Did Hillary Clinton break the law?
In connection with her use of the email server, my judgment is that she did not.
Did you just not able to prosecute it, or did Hillary Clinton break the law?
Well, I don't want to give an overly lawyerly answer, but the question I always look at is there evidence that would establish beyond a reasonable doubt that somebody engaged in conduct that violated a criminal statute? And my judgment here is there is not.
The FBI does background checks. If Hillary Clinton applied for the job at the FBI, would the FBI give Hillary Clinton a security clearance?
I don't want to answer a hypothetical. The FBI has a robust process in which we adjudicate the suitability of people for employment in the Bureau.
Given the fact pattern you laid out less than 48 hours ago, would a person who had dealt with classified information like that, would that person be granted a security clearance at the FBI?
It would be a very important consideration in a suitability determination.
You're kind of making my point, Director. The point being, because I injected the word Hillary Clinton, you gave me a different answer. But if I came up to you and said that this person was extremely careless with classified information, the exposure to hostile actors, and used, despite warnings, created unnecessary burdens and exposure, if they said that they had one device and you found out that they had multiple devices, if there had been email chains with somebody like Jake Sullivan asking for classification changes, you're telling me that the FBI would grant a security clearance to that person?
I hope I'm giving a consistent answer. I'm not saying what the answer would be. I'm saying that would be an important consideration in a suitability determination for anybody.
And that, it's just, personally, I just think that sounds like a bit of a political answer, because I can't imagine that the FBI would grant a security clearance to somebody with that fact pattern. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I just say what I said before. Again, it's very hard to answer in the hypothetical. I'll repeat it. It would be a very important consideration in a suitability determination.
Did Hillary Clinton do anything wrong?
And what do you mean by wrong?
I think it's self-evident.
Well, I'm a lawyer, I'm an investigator, and I'm, a normal human being.
Do you really believe there should be no consequence for Hillary Clinton and how she dealt with this?
Well, I didn't say, I hope folks remember what I said on Tuesday. I didn't say there's no consequence for someone who violates the rules regarding the handling of classified information. There are often very severe consequences in the FBI involving their employment, involving their pay, involving their clearances. That's what I said on Tuesday, and I hope folks walk away understanding that just because someone's not prosecuted for mishandling classified information, that doesn't mean if you work in the FBI, there aren't consequences for it.
So if Hillary Clinton, or if anybody, had worked at the FBI under this fact pattern, what would you do to that person?
There would be a security review and an adjudication of their suitability, and a range of discipline could be imposed from termination to reprimand, and in between suspensions, loss of clearance. So you could be walked out, or you could, depending upon the nature of the facts, you could be reprimanded. But there is a robust process to handle that.
Director Comey, you were the director of the FBI when General Petraeus pled guilty. Is that right?
Yes.
If I understand that case correctly, General Petraeus kept highly classified information in 8 personal notebooks at his private residence. Is that correct?
That is correct.
According to the filings in that case, his notebook included the identities of covert officers. They also included war strategy, intelligence capabilities, diplomatic discussions, quotes and deliberative discussions from high-level National Security Council meetings, and discussions with the president. General Petraeus shared his information with his lover and then biographer. He was caught on audio tape telling her, and I quote, "I mean, they are highly classified, some of them. They don't have it on, but I mean, there's code word stuff in there," end of quote. Director Comey, what did General Petraeus mean when he said he intentionally shared, quote, code word information with her? What does that mean?
The Petraeus case, to my mind, illustrates perfectly the kind of cases the Department of Justice is willing to prosecute. Even there, they prosecuted him for a misdemeanor. In that case, you had vast quantities of highly classified information, including special sensitive compartmented information. That's the reference to code words. vast quantity of it, not only shared with someone without authority to have it, but we found it in a search warrant hidden under the insulation in his attic, and then he lied to us about it during the investigation. So you have obstruction of justice, you have intentional misconduct, and a vast quantity of information. He admitted he knew that was the wrong thing to do. That is a perfect illustration of the kind of cases that get prosecuted. In my mind, it illustrates, importantly, the distinction to this case.
And John Petraeus did not admit to these facts when the FBI investigators first interviewed him, did he?
No, he lied about it.
But he did admit to these facts in a plea agreement, is that correct?
Yes.
Here's what the department filing said about General Petraeus, and I quote, "The acts taken by defendant David Howell Petraeus were in all respects knowing and deliberate and were not committed by mistake, accident, or other innocent reason," end of quote. Is that an accurate summary in your view, Director Comey?
Yes, it actually leaves out an important part of the case, which is the obstruction of justice.
Was he charged with obstruction of justice?
No.
And why not?
A decision made by the leadership of the Department of Justice not to insist upon a plea to that felony.
So the question is, do you agree with the claim that General Petraeus, and I quote, got in trouble for far less, end of quote?
No.
Do you agree with that statement?
No, it's the reverse.
And what do you mean by that?
His conduct, to me, illustrates the categories of behavior that mark the prosecutions that are actually brought. Clearly intentional conduct, knew what he was doing was a violation of the law. Huge amounts of information that even if you couldn't prove he knew it, it raises the inference that he did it, right? An effort to obstruct justice. That combination of things makes it worthy of a prosecution. A misdemeanor prosecution, but a prosecution nonetheless.
Sitting here today, do you stand by the FBI's recommendation to prosecute General Petraeus?
Oh, yeah.
Do you stand by the FBI's recommendation not to prosecute Hillary Clinton?
Oh, yes.
Director Comey, how many times have you testified before Congress about the General Petraeus case? Do you know?
I don't think I've ever testified. I don't think I've testified about it at all. I don't think so.
With that, I'll yield back.
Secretary Clinton said she never sent or received any classified information over her private email. Was that true?
Our investigation found that there was classified information sent.
So it was not true?
Right. That's what I said.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for a little shorter answer, so you and I are not here quite as long. Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true. There were a small number of portion markings on, I think, three of the documents.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
Now, there was classified material emailed.
Secretary Clinton said she used just one device. Was that true?
She used multiple devices during the 4 years of her term as Secretary of State.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
Secretary Clinton said neither she nor anyone else deleted work-related emails from her personal account. Was that true?
That's a harder one to answer. We found traces of work-related emails on devices or in Slack space, whether they were deleted or whether when a server was changed out, something happened to them. There's no doubt that there were work-related emails that were removed electronically from the email system.
Secretary Clinton said her lawyers read every one of the emails and were overly inclusive. Did her lawyers read the email content individually?
No.
Well, in the interest of time, and because I have a plane to catch tomorrow afternoon, I'm not going to go through any more of the false statements, but I am going to ask you to put on your old hat. False exculpatory statements, they are used for what?
Well, either for a substantive prosecution or for evidence of intent in a criminal prosecution.
Exactly. Intent and consciousness of guilt, right? Is that right?
Right. Consciousness
of guilt and intent.
Was your investigation steeped in political bias, yes or no?
No, it was steeped in no kind of bias.
Thank you. The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, was even more critical. He accused you of not applying the law equally. He said your recommendation shows, and I quote, the Clintons are living above the law. They're being held to a different set of standards. That is clearly what this looks like, end quote. How do you respond to his accusations that you held the Clintons to a different set of standards than anyone else? Did you hold them to a different standard or the same standard?
It's just not accurate. We try very hard to apply the same standard, whether you're rich or poor, white or black, old or young, famous or not known at all. I just hope folks will take the time to understand the other cases, because a lot of confusion out there about what the facts were of the other cases that I understand lead good people, reasonable people, to have questions.
Senator Cruz also criticized you. He said that there are, and I quote, serious concerns about the integrity of Director Comey's decision. He stated that you, quote, you had rewritten a clearly worded federal criminal statute. Did you rewrite the law in any way or rewrite any statute?
No.
Now, I truly hesitate to mention the next one. But Donald Trump took these conspiracy theories to a totally new level. He said, and I quote, it was no accident that charges were recommended against Hillary the exact same day as President Obama campaigned with her for the first time. So did you plan the timing of your announcement to help Secretary Clinton's campaign event on Tuesday?
No. Timing was entirely my own. Nobody knew I was going to do it, including the press. I'm very proud of the way the FBI, nobody leaked that. We didn't coordinate it, didn't tell, just not a consideration.
Mr. Trump also claimed that Secretary Clinton bribed the Attorney General with an extension of her job, and I guess this somehow affected your decision. I know it's a ridiculous question, but I have to ask it. Did you make your decision because of some kind of bribe to the Attorney General?
No.
I tell you, are you surprised, as I am, by the intensity of the attacks from the GOP on you after having made a decision, a thoughtful decision, an independent decision with the professional staff of the FBI?
I'm not surprised by the intense interest and debate. I predicted it. I think it's important that we talk about these things. They inevitably become focused on individual people. That's okay. We'll just continue to have the conversation.
What should we learn from the process the Secretary has gone through? I'm sure there will be questions about how there was even confusion, for example, in the State Department. But what should we learn when it comes to our own use of email or the use of federal employees on this question?
The most important thing to learn is that an unclassified email system is no case for an email conversation about classified matters. And by that I mean either sending a document as an attachment over unclassified email that is classified, or having a conversation about something that is a classified subject on an unclassified email system. That's the focus of the concern. That's the focus of this investigation. That it was also a personal email adds to the concern about the case because of the security vulnerabilities associated with a personal system. But the root of the problem is people using unclassified systems to conduct business that is classified. And so all of us should have access to, if we have access to classified information, classified communication systems. The FBI has three levels: unclassified system, a secret system, and a top secret system. You can email on all three, but you need to make sure you don't email on the unclassified system, even if that's a government classified system, about matters that are classified. That's the important lesson to learn. Everybody ought to be aware of it. Everybody ought to be trained on it. We spend a lot of time training on it in the FBI to make sure folks are sensitive to the need to move a classified discussion, even if it doesn't involve sending a document, to the appropriate forum.
First question. Did Secretary Clinton or any member of her staff intentionally violate federal law?
We did not develop clear evidence of that.
Did Secretary Clinton or any member of her staff attempt to obstruct your investigation?
We did not develop evidence of that.
In your opinion, do the mistakes Secretary Clinton has already apologized for and expressed regret for rise to a level that would be worthy of federal prosecution?
As I said Tuesday, our judgment, not just mine, but the team's judgment at the FBI, is that the Justice Department would not bring such a case. No Justice Department under any, whether Republican or Democrat administration.
I'm trying to look at the, where we have a lot of comparisons in other cases. And it seems like all the cases where prosecutions have gone forward, the subject of the investigation has demonstrated a clear intent to deliver classified information to a person or persons who were unauthorized to receive that. So if you look at the PFC, Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, that was a court-martial, but he demonstrated a clear intent to publish that information, which was classified. Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks editor, I guess, and publisher, again, a wide and deliberate attempt to publish classified information. General Petraeus, which we talked about earlier today, shared information with his biographer. Jeffrey Sterling, sending stuff to the New York Times. Former CIA officer Kiriakou, who was interested in writing a book, so he hung on to his information. And even former director of the CIA, John Deutsch, who retained classified information on a couple of servers, one in Belmont, Massachusetts, and one in Bethesda, Maryland. And that was after he became a private citizen. So in all those cases, there's a clear intent. As you said before, you look at what people did and what they were thinking when they did that. And I would just ask you, is there a clear distinction between what those people did and what Secretary Clinton did in her case?
In my view, yes. The Deutsch case illustrates it perfectly. And he took huge amount of documents, almost all at the TSSCI level, had them in hard copy at his house, had them on an unclassed system connected to the Internet, attempted to destroy some of them when he got caught, admitted, I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing this. So you have clear intent, huge amounts of documents, obstruction of justice. Those are the kind of cases that get prosecuted. That's what I said when I meant it when I said it. In my experience, which is three decades, no reasonable prosecutor would bring this case. I know that frustrates people, but that's the way the law is, and that's the way the practice is of the Department of Justice.
You were talking about some markings a little bit earlier. Is that right? Can you describe what those markings are like? You markings on documents. I think you said there were three documents with certain markings on them that indicated classified. Go ahead.
There were three emails that down in the body of the email, in the three different emails, there were paragraphs that at the beginning of the paragraph had a parenthesis, a capital C, and then a parenthesis. Mm-hmm. And that is a portion marking to indicate that
that paragraph.
That paragraph is classified at the confidential level, which is the lowest level of classification.
And so out of the 30,000 documents, this is you found these three markings? Is that what you're saying?
Three emails bore C markings down in the body. None of the emails had headers, which is at the top of a document that says it's classified. Three had, within the body, the portion marking for C.
Thank you.
Chairman, Mr. Meadows mentioned one instance in which Secretary Clinton said that she did not mail any classified material to anyone. Actually, she said that several other times. But it is accurate, Director Comey, that you found at least 110 instances of when she had emailed classified material.
110 that she either received or sent.
Right. And it also is accurate that, quote, Clinton's lawyers cleaned their devices in such a way as to preclude complete forensic recovery.
Correct.
And also, when she said, when Secretary Clinton said that nothing she sent was marked classified, and you said in your press conference, but even if information is not marked classified in an email, particularly our participants who know or should know that the subject matter is classified are still obligated to protect it. Do you feel that Secretary Clinton knew or should have known that she was obligated to protect classified information?
Yes.
With her legal background and her long experience in government. Also, she said at one point that she has directed all emails, work-related emails, to be forwarded to the State Department. Is it also accurate that you discovered thousands of other emails that were work-related other than the 30,000 that she submitted?
Correct.
Now, Director Comey, you discussed your team a little bit, and they deserve a lot of credit for all of the hard work and effort that went into this investigation. And I think you just said that they were unanimous, that everyone who looked at this agreed that no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
How many people were on this team?
It changed at various times, but somewhere between 15 and 20, and then we used a lot of other FBI folks to help from time to time.
And how many hours were spent on this investigation?
We haven't counted yet. They I said to them, they moved. They put 3 years of work into 12 calendar months.
And how many pages of documents did the FBI review in this investigation?
Thousands and thousands and thousands.
And the agents doing the document review, were they qualified or were they unqualified?
They were an all-star team. They're a great group of folks.
How about Secretary Clinton? Did she agree to be interviewed?
Yes.
Come in voluntarily without the need of a subpoena?
Yes.
Was she interviewed?
Yes.
Was she interviewed by experienced, critical, veteran agents and law enforcement officers, or by some kind of credulous, gullible newbies doing their on-the-job training, Director?
She was interviewed by the kind of folks the American people would want doing the interview, real pros.
All right. You were asked about markings on a few documents. I have the manual here, Marking Classified National Security Information, and I don't think you were given a full chance to talk about those three documents with the little C's on them. Were they properly documented? Were they properly marked according to the manual?
No.
According to the manual, and I ask unanimous consent to enter this into the record, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection, so ordered.
According to the manual, if you're going to classify something, there has to be a header on the document, right?
Correct.
Was there a header on the three documents that we've discussed today that had the little C in the text someplace?
No, there were three emails. The C was in the body in the text, but there was no header on the email or in the text.
So if Secretary Clinton really were an expert at what's classified and what's not classified, and we're following the manual, the absence of a header would tell her immediately that those three documents were not classified. Am I correct in that?
That would be a reasonable inference.
All right. I thank you for your testimony, Director. I yield back.
First question I want to ask you, is this hearing unfair? Has it been unfair to you?
No.
Thank you. One purpose of security procedures for classified information is to prevent hostile information, hostile nations from obtaining classified information. Is that fair?
Yes.
And did hostile nations obtain classified information from Secretary Clinton's servers?
I don't know. It's possible, but we don't have direct evidence of that. We couldn't find direct evidence.
I want to, without making this a law school class, I want to try to get into intent. There are various levels of intent in the criminal law, everything from knowingly and willfully doing something all the way down to strict liability. Would you agree with me on that?
Yes.
And in Title 18, most of the criminal laws in Title 18 have the words knowingly and willfully in them. And that is the standard, typically, that United States attorneys prosecute under.
Most do. Unlawfully, knowingly, and willfully is our standard formulation for charging a case.
And there are also a variety of others between the knowingly and willfully standard and the strict liability standard. And many, like environmental crimes, have a much lower standard because of the toxic materials that are at risk of harming individuals. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's talk about this particular statute, 18 U.S.C. 1924. I take it we could all agree, or you and I can agree, on a couple of the elements. Secretary Clinton was an employee of the United States.
Correct.
And as the result of that employment, she received classified information.
Correct.
And there's no doubt about those two elements. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether the next element is one element or two, but it talks about knowingly remove such materials without authority and with the intent to retain such material at an unauthorized location. So I'm going to treat those as two separate parts of the intent element. First of all, do you see the word willfully anywhere in this statute?
I don't.
Okay. And that would indicate to you that there is a lower threshold for intent?
No, it wouldn't.
Why?
Because we often, as I understand the Justice Department's practice and judicial practice, will impute to any criminal statute at that level with a knowingly also a requirement that you know that you're involved in criminal activity of some sort, a general mens rea requirement.
So, and you would apply that same standard to environmental crimes?
No, if it specifically says it's a negligence-based crime, I don't think a judge would impute that.
But Congress specifically omitted the word willfully from this statute, and yet you are implying the word willfully in the statute. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah, so what the statute does say is knowingly removes such materials without authority. Is it fair that she knew that she didn't have authority to have this server in her basement?
Yes, that's true.
And she knew that she was receiving materials, classified information, in the emails that she received on her BlackBerry and other devices.
I can't answer. I'm hesitating as a prosecutor because it's always what level of proof. I do not believe there's evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that she knew she was receiving classified information in violation of the requirements.
But that's not my
question.
There's
evidence of that.
That's my question. My question, in fairness, is did she know that she was receiving information on the servers at her location?
Oh, so I'm sorry. Yeah, of course, yes. She knew she was using her email system.
And as Secretary of State, she also knew that she would be receiving classified information.
Yes, in general.
Okay. And did she then have the intent to retain such material at an unauthorized location? She retained the material that she received as Secretary of State at her server in her basement, and that was unauthorized.
You're asking me, did she have the... Then I'm going to ask you the burden of proof question in a second, but did she have the intent to retain classified information on the server or just to retain any information on the server?
Well, we've already established that she knew as Secretary of State that she was going to receive classified information in her emails. And so did she retain such information that she received as Secretary of State on her servers in her basement?
She did, in fact. There is, in my view, not evidence beyond certainly probable cause. There's not evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that she knew she was receiving classified information or that she intended to retain it on her server. There's evidence of that. But when I said there's not clear evidence of intent, that's what I meant. I could not, even if the Department of Justice would bring that case, I could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt those two elements.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Question I would ask, Director Comey, what's your definition of extremely careless, if you could go through that?
I intended it as a common sense term. It's one of those kind of you know it when you see it sort of things. Somebody who is should know better. Someone who is demonstrating a lack of care that strikes me as there's ordinary accidents and then there's just real sloppiness. So I think of that as kind of real sloppiness.
So you stated that you had found 110 emails on Secretary Clinton's server that were classified at the time they were sent or received. Yet Secretary Clinton has insisted for over a year publicly that she never sent or received any classified emails. The question I have from that, would it be difficult for any cabinet-level official, and specifically any cabinet official, let alone one who is a former White House resident or U.S. senator, to determine if information is classified?
Would it be difficult?
Would it be difficult?
That's hard to answer in the abstract. It would depend upon the context in which they're hearing it or seeing it. Obviously, if it's marked, which is why we require markings, it's easy. It's just too hard to answer because there's so many other situations you might encounter it.
But with the training that we receive and certainly a Secretary of State would receive or someone who lives in the White House, that goes a little above and beyond just the common sense individual out there trying to determine, knowing that classified information will be brought and to remove to an unauthorized site ought to cause a bit of pause there, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and if you're a government official, you should be attentive to it because
absolutely.
You know that the matters you deal with could involve sensitive information, so sure.
So Secretary Clinton's revised statement that she never knowingly sent or received any classified information is probably also untrue.
Yeah, I don't want to comment on people's public statements. We did not find evidence sufficient to establish that she knew she was sending classified information beyond a reasonable doubt to meet that the intent standard.
Did you personally interview the secretary on Saturday morning?
I didn't personally, no.
And how many agents did?
I think we had five or six.
Did you talk to all of those agents after the interview?
I did not speak to all of them, no.
Did she testify or talk to them under oath?
No.
She did not. Well, that's a problem. But
no, it's still a crime to lie to us.
Now, did you write the statement that you gave on Tuesday?
Yes.
You did. And did you write, and you said you didn't talk to all of the agents. But all of the agents, did they meet with you? And then is that the group that said that we all vote to not recommend prosecution?
Well, I did not meet with all of the agents. I've met with all of them.
We're getting the word that it was like unanimous out of FBI that we don't prosecute.
Or what's your question, Congressman?
Well, again, I want to know who counseled you. You read their summary. Mm-hmm. Okay, she was not under oath. And it appears, I mean, members have cited here where she lied or misled to Congress, which will lead now to the next step of our possibly giving you a referral on this matter. You're aware of that?
Yes, someone mentioned that earlier.
That probably will happen. Thank you for shedding some light on what took place.
Can I, Mr. Chairman, can
sure,
I
go ahead.
Respond
Absolutely.
Just very briefly? I hope what you'll tell the folks in the cafe is, look me in the eye and listen to what I'm about to say. I did not coordinate that with anyone. The White House, the Department of Justice, nobody outside the FBI family had any idea what I was about to say. I say that under oath. I stand by that. There was no coordination. No, there was an insinuation of what you were saying that I don't mean to get strong in responding, but I want to make sure I was definitive about that.
Director, you said that hostile actors successfully gained access to the commercial email accounts of people Secretary Clinton regularly communicated with. In the case of the Romanian hacker Guccifer, according to accessing Sidney Blumenthal's account, and, you know, that's been public for some time. During your investigation, were there other people in the State Department or that regularly communicated with Secretary Clinton that you can confirm were successfully hacked?
Yes.
And were these folks that regularly communicated with the Secretary?
Yes.
And were you able to conclude definitively that the attempted hacks referenced in the IG report were not successful?
We were not able to conclude that they were successful. I think that's the best way to say it.
All right. So while you said that given the nature of Clinton's server, you'd be unlikely to see evidence one way or the other of whether or not it had been successfully hacked, how many unsuccessful attempts did you uncover? Did you find any there?
There were unsuccessful attempts. I don't know the number off the top of my head.
You have an idea? Were they from foreign governments? Where did they come from?
I want to be careful what I say in an open setting. We can give you that information, but I don't want to give the any foreign government's knowledge of what I know. So
would you be so far as to say they probably weren't American high school students fooling around?
Correct. It was not limited to criminal activity.
During your investigation, did you or anyone in the FBI interview the hacker, Guccifer?
Yes.
He claimed he gained access to Sid Blumenthal's email account and traced him back to Clinton's private server. Can you confirm that Guccifer never gained access to her server?
Yeah, he did not. He admitted that was a lie.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. All right. Section 793 of Title 18 of the United States Code makes it a crime to allow classified information to be stolen through gross negligence. Were you to discover that hostile actors had actually gotten into Secretary Clinton's email, would that have changed your recommendation with respect to prosecuting her?
Unlikely, although we didn't consider that question because we didn't have those facts.
I'm really concerned about this issue of up-classification because it seems as if, and I was not aware of this until the investigation, there is quite a strong discrepancy between not just former Secretary Clinton, but even former Secretary Powell, what he thinks should be classified, and then what is classified after the fact. And I think if I'm right, there were some 2,000 emails that were up-classified. I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah, it actually was not a concept I was real familiar with before this. It's the notion that something might not have been classified at the time, but that in hindsight, as a government agency considers releasing it, they raise the classification level to protect it because it's a candid assessment of a foreign leader or something like that. I think it is largely a State Department thing because their diplomats will often be conversing in an unclassified way that when they look at releasing it in response to a FOIA request, they think it ought to be protected in some fashion. But honestly, I kind of push those to the side.
Right.
The important thing here was what was classified at the time. That's what matters.
Right. One of the common themes that I came in here to ask, but I realize it's not the right question now, is what's the difference between extremely careless and gross negligence? But in the process of this hearing, what I'm hearing you say is That's not what your reluctance is based on. It's not based on a reluctance to prosecute, by the way. Your reluctance to recommend a prosecution or an indictment is not based on parsing those words. It's based on your concern for this statute, this statute. Is that correct from your opening statement?
It's broader than that, actually, the statute, and it fits within a framework of fairness and also my understanding of what the Department of Justice has prosecuted over the last 50 years.
So when you say a reasonable prosecutor wouldn't take this case, it's not because you don't think she made that she lied in public or that maybe she was negligent. It's because you have concern with the prosecutorial history of this statute.
And not just that statute, but also 1924, which is the misdemeanor. I also don't see cases that were prosecuted on facts like these.
But
both,
but
both you, 793 and 1924.
But you did find one prosecution, and has it been overturned by the Supreme Court?
No, there was one time it was charged in an espionage case, mm-hmm. and the guy ended up pleading guilty to a different offense, so it was never adjudicated.
So, you know, so your concern is with the negligence threshold. That you think it requires mens rea or knowing the crime. But in all 50 states, isn't there a negligent homicide statute, and aren't people prosecuted for that all the time? And doesn't the Supreme Court and all the courts below that uphold those prosecutions just on the basis of negligence?
I don't know whether all 50 states. I think negligent homicide and manslaughter statutes are relatively common.
Okay. So, but don't all 50 states have something like that, and aren't those sustained in the upper courts, those convictions?
I don't know whether all 50 states have something like that, but again, I think it's very common, and I think those are sustained.
So don't we have a history of, you implied that the American judicial system doesn't have a history of convicting somebody for negligence, but don't we in other domains of justice?
We do. I know the federal system best. There are very few in the federal system. They're mostly, as we talked about earlier, in the Environmental and Food and Drug Administration
okay.
area.
Thank you. Now, I want to ask another question that's come up here. You've basically related to us that this information, this top secret or classified information, got into these email chains because of conversations people were having. They were relating what they heard before in other settings. Is that correct?
No. That maybe in some cases, but it was people having an email conversation about a classified subject.
Okay, so they were having an email conversation, but how in this email conversation did this Bohr marking show up? Like, if they're not sophisticated enough, as you said before, even Hillary Clinton wasn't sophisticated enough to recognize a Bohr marking, the C with the parentheses for confidential or classified, if they weren't that sophisticated, how did they recreate that Bohr marking in their emails when they're having these discussions?
Yes, a lot of what ended up on Secretary Clinton's server were stuff that had been forwarded up a chain, mm-hmm. and gets to her from her staff, a lot of that forwarding, and then she comments sometimes on it. Someone down in the chain, in typing a paragraph that summarized something, put a portion marking, C, on that paragraph.
Can you, doesn't it take a lot of intent to take a classified document from a setting that's authorized and secure to one that's not? Wouldn't it require intent for somebody to recreate that classification marking in an unsecure setting?
I don't know. It's possible, but also
Did they accidentally type open parentheses C, close parentheses, and indent the paragraph?
Oh, no, you wouldn't accidentally type.
Right, so
someone
it
down
intent.
The chain.
Right.
Someone down the chain.
Okay, so this is my question. Is someone down the chain being investigated? Because they had the intent, clearly, if they had the sophistication, which Hillary Clinton, you insinuate, may have lacked, if they had the sophistication to know what this Bohr marking was, they had to have the intent to recreate it or the intent to cut, copy, paste from a secure system to an unsecure system. Wouldn't that be correct?
Potentially, but we're not. There's not an open criminal investigation of that person way down the chain.
Shouldn't there be
a criminal investigation?
An investigation if there's intent, which is what you, I think you may be reasonable in requiring that threshold. But don't we treat everybody the same, whether at the top of the chain or the bottom of the chain?
Sure, you want to if the conduct is the same. But we did not criminally investigate whoever started that chain and put the C on that on those paragraphs. We did.
Okay, I would suggest maybe you might want to do that, and I will yield back to the chairman.
According to the State Department, which addressed this issue yesterday, a spokesman said that the call sheets appear to bear classified markings, but this was actually a mistake. To quote, generally speaking, there's a standard process for developing call sheets for the Secretary of State. Call sheets are often marked, but it's not untypical at all for them to be marked at the confidential level prior to a decision by the Secretary that he or she will make that call. Oftentimes, once it is clear the Secretary intends to make a call, the Department will then consider the call sheet SBU, sensitive but unclassified or unclassified altogether, and then mark it appropriately and prepare it for the Secretary's use in actually marking the call. The classification of a call sheet, therefore, is not necessarily fixed in time, and staffers in the Secretary's office who are involved in preparing and finalizing these call sheets, they understand that. Given this context, it appears that markings in the appropriate in the documents raised in the media reports were no longer necessary or appropriate at the time they were sent as an actual email. Those markings were a human error. They didn't need to be there. Did you know this?
No.
Did Congress ask you to pursue this investigation?
No, it was a referral from the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community.
So it wasn't Republicans either, was it?
No.
How did you go about collecting the evidence?
We used the tools that we normally use in a criminal investigation.
Did you receive a congressional referral for all the information that you collected?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, then, one of the things that I'm struggling with or that I would like to know specifically is, under oath, Ms. Clinton made these three comments that we now know are untrue in the Benghazi hearing. Number one, she's turned over all her work-related emails. Number two, telling the committee that her attorneys went through every single email. And then finally, and probably the one that continues to stick the most, there was, and I quote, "nothing marked classified on my emails," end quote. Now, earlier, when the chairman questioned you about this, you said something about needing a congressional referral recommendation. My question is, something of this magnitude, why, or can you help me understand why didn't it rise to your investigation or someone bringing that to your knowledge as far as saying this is a problem, here she is, again, the Secretary Clinton lying under oath, specifically about our investigation?
Well, we, out of respect for the legislative branch being a separate branch, we do not commence investigations that focus on activities before Congress without Congress asking us to get involved. That's a longstanding practice of the Department of Justice and the FBI. So we don't watch on TV and say we ought to investigate that. You know, Joe Smith said this in front of the committee. It requires the committee to say, we think we have an issue here. Would you all take a look at it?
So let me ask you this, Director. Did Secretary Clinton, in fact, comply with the department's policies or the Federal Records Act?
I don't think so. I know you have the State Inspector General here who's more of an expert on all the department's policies, but at least in some respects, no.
So keeping the servers at home and all these types of things obviously is not in compliance with the department's policies.
Yes, and I've read the Inspector General's report on that. That's part of the reason I can answer that part with some confidence.
Director Comey, are you implying in that statement that the private email servers of Secretary Clinton's were perhaps less secure than a Gmail account that is used for free by a billion people around this planet?
Yes, and I'm not looking to pick on Gmail. Their security is actually pretty good. The weakness is in the individual users. But yes, Gmail has full-time security staff and thinks about patching and logging and protecting their systems in a way that was not the case here.
You're trying to get inside the head of Hillary Clinton in this investigation and know whether there was intent. And so we all know what she told the people. That's been well documented. She said that she did not do those things, that she did not send or receive classified emails, that she used one server and one device for her convenience. And since then, I think even in your statement, you recognize that those were not correct. Is that fair?
I really don't want to get in the business of trying to parse and judge her public statements. And so I think I've tried to avoid doing that sitting here.
Why do you feel that's important?
Because what matters to me is, what did she say to the FBI? That's obviously first and foremost for us.
Well, in this case, for some reason, she felt the need to misrepresent what she had done with this server all throughout the investigation. You guys, after a year, brought her in on Saturday, and in 3.5 hours came out with the conclusion that she shouldn't be prosecuted because there was no intent. Is that right?
No.
Okay, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it fair to say that your interpretation of Hillary Clinton's handling of top secret information classified documents was extremely careless?
Yes.
And is it fair to say that you said that you went on to define extremely careless, that Hillary Clinton's handling of top secret information was sloppy or represents sloppiness?
Yeah, that's another way of trying to express the same concept.
And then just a few minutes ago, you also stated that you now believe that Hillary Clinton is not nearly as sophisticated as people thought. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually. No, not as people thought, but as people would assume about somebody with that background.
Okay, so...
I'm sorry. I should be clear about this. Technically sophisticated. I'm not opining on other kinds of sophistication.
All right. In the last minute, Director, I want to talk a little bit about precedent, because I think my colleague Trey Gowdy made a great point that there still is really no precedence in terms of punishment for this type of behavior. Are you familiar with Brian Nishimura's case?
Yes.
Okay, he's a naval reservist, for those who don't know, and he was prosecuted. What is the difference between his case and Hillary Clinton's case in terms of extremely carelessness and gross negligence? Because we're dealing with Statute 793, Section F, where it does not require intent. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry. 793F is the gross negligence standard.
That's right. 1917. Right, and is that why Brian Nishimura was punished?
No, Nishimura was prosecuted under the misdemeanor statute, 1924,
okay,
on facts that are very different. If you want me to go through them, I'll go through them, but very different than...
Okay, I think that there's been a review of this case, and they're very similar, and that's why people feel that there's a double standard.
And what they're reading in the media is not a complete accounting of the facts in that case.
Well, would you agree then with Representative Gowdy that there still is really no precedence for punishing someone like Hillary Clinton, and she could really go in, potentially be elected president and do this again without fear of being punished?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that question.
Is there any evidence, given that that's the standard that we all want, desire, and expect, to suggest that Hillary Clinton was not charged by the Department of Justice due to inappropriate political influence or due to her current or previous public positions?
Zero. And if there is such evidence, I'd love folks to show it to me.
And in that regard, was there a double standard?
No. In fact, I think my entire goal was to avoid a double standard, to avoid what sometimes prosecutors call celebrity hunting and doing something for a famous person that you would never do for an ordinary Joe or Jane.
Did I understand you correctly that this decision was made within 3.5 hours of an interview, and that was all?
No, we investigated for a year.
You investigated, but you interviewed her for 3.5 hours last week and then came to the conclusion?
Correct. We interviewed her on Saturday for 3.5 hours, the last step in a year-long investigation.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, Hillary Clinton has testified that the servers that she used were always safe and secure. Yet you refute that and say, no, that is not the case at all. Were they ever secure? Were the servers that she were using, were they ever secure?
Well, the challenge, security is not binary. It's just degrees of security. It was less secure than one at the State Department, or, as I said, even one at a private commercial provider like a Gmail.
Well, let me ask you this. She's got staff. And she's got people around her. Did they know she was doing this? Did they know that she was using these other devices? Did anybody ever bring it to her attention and say, hey, you're not supposed to be doing that?
I think a lot of people around the secretary understood she was using a private personal email setup.
Then why didn't they say something? Don't they have a responsibility as well?
That's an important question that goes to the culture of the State Department that's worth asking.
Earlier today, you heard a long list of statements that Mrs. Clinton has made previously, both to the public and to Congress, that were not factually accurate. I think you went down the whole long list. When she met with you folks on Saturday last week, I take it she didn't say the same things at that interview?
I'm not equipped sitting here without the 302 in front of me to answer in that broad brush.
But it's your testimony.
But I have no basis. We do not have a basis for concluding she lied to the FBI.
Gotcha. Did anybody ask her on Saturday why she told y'all one thing and told us another?
I don't know as I sit here. I mean, I'll figure that
out.
Would
that have been of interest to you in helping to establish intent?
It could have been, sure.
More importantly, I think, did anybody ask her why she set up the email system as she did in the first place?
Yes.
And the answer was convenience?
Yeah, it was already there. It was a system her husband had, and so she just jumped onto it.
Were you aware that just earlier this week her assistant actually said it was for an entirely different reason? It was to it was to keep emails from being accessible, and that it was for a concealment purpose. She was, Uma Abedin was asked in her deposition why it was set up, and it was said to keep her personal emails from being accessible. Question to whom? To anybody? Were you aware of that testimony?
Generally, yes.
Okay. If the next president of the United States does the exact same thing on the day he or she is sworn into office, sets up a private email service for the purpose of concealing information from the public or from anybody, that as a result of that, potential national security level information to our enemies, lies about it, and then destroys the evidence during an investigation, that there'll be no criminal charges, if you're the FBI director, against that person.
Yeah, that's not a question the FBI director should answer.
I mean, I'm asking if she does the exact same thing as president as she's done today, your result will be the exact same as it was 48 hours ago. There'll be no criminal findings, right?
If the facts were exactly the same?
Right.
And the law was exactly the same?
Right.
Yeah, the result would be the same.
Does it bother you that the precedent that you are setting today may well lead to a circumstance where our top secret information continues to be exposed to our potential enemies?
No, in this sense. The precedent that I'm setting today is my absolute best effort to treat people fairly without regard to who they are. If that continues to be the record of the FBI and the Justice Department, that's what it should be. The rest of the implications in your question are beyond that. They're important, but they're not for the FBI to answer. We should aspire to be apolitical. Facts and the law treat Joe the same as Sally, as Secretary so-and-so. That's my goal.
If you would come to a different decision, I tend to agree everything you just said. If you would come to a different decision, do you think that would have a different precedential value that would keep our information more safe?
If we decided to recommend criminal
charges
here? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I could argue it both ways. I guess I'm a lawyer. I can argue everything both ways, but I could argue that both ways.
My colleague alluded to Brian Pagliano, the IT advisor, and were you made aware of the deal of immunity with him?
I am aware.
Now that Attorney General Lynch has stated that there will be no charges, there's many that suspect that he failed to answer questions in his congressional deposition, that he had something to hide. Why did your investigators at the DOJ decide it was necessary to offer Mr. Pagliano immunity?
I need to be more thoughtful about what I say about an immunity deal in public. Maybe totally fine. I just don't want to screw up because we're doing this so quickly.
Okay.
In general, I can answer, because I've done it many times as a prosecutor. You make a grant of immunity in order to get information that you don't think you could get otherwise.
But you know that there may be something there in hindsight, right? You're looking ahead because of the pertinent information this person possesses.
Right. You believe they have relevant information to the investigation.
So did the investigators draft an interview report known as a 302 with Mr. Pagliano?
Yes.
Given the importance of this case, will you commit to voluntarily disclosing the 302s for review of Brian Pagliano and other witnesses interviewed as part of your investigation?
I'll commit to giving you everything I can possibly give you under the law and to doing it as quickly as possible. That said, then that means I got to go back and sort it out. For example, the 302 of Secretary Clinton is classified at the TSSCI level, so we got to sort through all that, but we'll do it. We'll do it quickly.
Director Comey, I want to go back to the issue of intent for just a second. We can disagree on whether or not it's an element of the offense. Let's assume for the sake of argument that you're right and I'm wrong and that it is an element of the offense. Secretary Clinton said that she was, quote, well aware of classification requirements. Those are her words, not mine and not yours. So if she were, quote, well aware of classification requirements, how did that impact your analysis of her intent? Because I've heard you this morning describe her as being less than sophisticated. She disagrees with that.
Well, I was talking about technical sophistication. The question is, I would hope everybody who works in the government is aware of classification requirements. The question then is, if you mishandled classified information, when you did that thing, did you know you were doing something that was unlawful? That's the intent question.
All right. Well, you and I are going to have to get together some other time and discuss all the people we prosecuted who were unaware that they were breaking the law. There are lots of really dumb defendants out there who don't know that what they're doing is against the law. But let's go with what you say.
I disagree. You may have prosecuted a lot of those folks. I did not prosecute a lot of those folks.
I was a gutter prosecutor, and you were a white-collar prosecutor. Trust me. There are lots of people who don't know you can't kill other people. Let me ask you this. On the issue of intent, you say it was convenience. okay? You're a really smart lawyer. If it were convenience, Director, she wouldn't have waited 2 years to return the documents, and she wouldn't have deleted them 4 years after they were created. So you can't really believe that her intent was convenience when she never turned them over until Congress started asking for them, could you?
Yeah, my focus, and I hope I made this clear, my focus is on what was the thinking around the classified information. I mean, it's relevant why the system was set up and the thinking there, but she didn't, I don't understand her to be saying, well, I think I've said it already, but that's my focus.
So I know I'm out of time, but it just strikes me you are reading a specific intent element into a gross negligence statute, not even general intent.
Gentleman's
a
time.
A specific intent.
Gentleman's time is
element.
Expired.
Yeah. That. I'm sorry.
Go. The director can answer.
I enjoy talking with him. The question you got to ask is, so why is it that the Department of Justice, since 1917, has not used that gross negligence statute but charging it once in an espionage case? And whether their decision was smart or not, that is the record of fairness. And so you have to decide, do I treat this person against that record? And if I do, is that a fair thing to do? Even if you're not worried about the constitutionality of it, and my judgment is no reasonable prosecutor would do that. That would be celebrity hunting. That would be treating this person differently than John Doe.
Director, I want to follow up on that. Why did you do what you did? You know, my interpretation of what the FBI is supposed to be doing is come to a determination of the facts and then turn it over to a prosecutor. You were a prosecutor, but you're not a prosecutor now.
Right.
It is unprecedented that an FBI director gave the type of press conference that he did and took a position that an unreasonable prosecutor would only take this case forward. Why did you do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. The everything I did would have been done privately in the normal course. We have great conversations in the FBI and prosecutors. We make recommendations. We argue back and forth. What I decided to do was offer transparency to the American people about the whys of that, what I was going to do, because I thought that was very, very important for their confidence in the system of justice. And within that, their confidence in the FBI. And I was very concerned if I didn't show that transparency, that in that lack of transparency, people would say, geez, what's going on here? Something seems squirrely here. And so I said, I will do something unprecedented because I think this is an unprecedented situation. Now, the next director who is criminally investigating one of the two candidates for president may find him or herself bound by my precedent. Okay, so if that happens in the next 100 years, they'll have to deal with what I did. So I decided it was worth doing.
You know, I've been sitting here listening to this, and I really, this is something that bothered me in the Lois Lerner case, and it bothers me in this case. And I'm just wondering your opinion. Ms. Lawrence talked about this, the chilling effect of your having to come here and justify your decisions. And I know that you've been really nice, and you just explained why you did what you did, and I'm glad you're doing it. But, you know, do you at all, and I mean, taking off, I'm just talking about, here you've got people making decisions and then being pulled here in the Congress to then say, okay, to be questioned about the decisions. At what point, or do you even think about it becoming a chilling effect? Because most people, you know, when their decisions made, don't get this kind of opportunity, as you well know. There are no statements. You know, they either get indicted or they're not. So I know that you see this as a special case, and I wonder whether you agree with Ms. Lawrence that we may be just going down a slippery slope. That's all I want to ask.
And my honest answer is I don't think so. When I talked to the chairman, I agreed to come because I think the American people care deeply about this. There's all kinds of folks watching this at home or being told, well, lots of other cases were prosecuted and she wasn't. I want them to know that's not true. And so I want to have this conversation, and I actually welcome the opportunity. Look, it's a pain. I've had to go to the bathroom for about an hour, but it is
really
important. Don't
worry, we're halfway done. So.
It is really important to do because this is an unprecedented situation. Transparency is the absolute best thing for me and for democracy. And I realize, Mr. Chairman, my folks told me I screwed up one fact that I should fix. I was misremembering. In the Petraeus case, we didn't find the notebooks in the attic. We found it in his desk. So I wanted to make sure I was fair to him about that. But I really don't think so. I don't think it has a chilling effect. Again, if there's another presidential candidate being investigated by the FBI, maybe they'll be bound by this. Lord willing, it's not going to happen again. Certainly, I have 2,619 days left in this job. It won't happen on my term, but if it does, I won't be chilled.
At first, when I hear about erasing emails, I think it's, you know, like on my own phone where I might erase an auto insurance solicitation. The erasures here, however, were not just Mrs. Clinton pressing delete. Were they? There was a much greater effort made to make sure that these emails would never be recovered. Do you want to comment on what was done to erase the emails?
I think what you're referring to is after her lawyers. Her lawyers say, although I'm not able to verify this, there were 60,000 or so left at the end of 2014. They went through them in a way I described in my statement 2 days ago, and then they produced the ones that were work-related, and then they erased from their system the ones that were not work-related. That was done using technical tools, basically, to remove them from the lawyers, from the servers, to wipe them away.
Okay, so in other words, the effort was not just Mrs. Clinton or somebody went delete, delete, delete. They went above and beyond that so that your top technical experts could not get back at these emails, correct?
Right, not fully. We were able to, by going...
You recovered a few.
Yeah, we could go through the lawyers' laptops and see some traces, but not fully recover them.
Okay. Now, the information that I have, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, implies that these erasures were done in December of 2014, after the Benghazi scandal broke, after there were questions about the Clinton Foundation. Did you ever come across why she allowed these emails to be out there, even for years after she stopped being Secretary of State, but all of a sudden, as these other scandals began to bubble up, she felt... or her lawyers felt, that she had to erase them?
Yeah, I think the way the process worked is she had emails that were just on her system. She actually had deleted some, I think, over time, as an ordinary user would. And then the State Department contacted her and other former secretaries and said, we have a gap in our records. We need you to look and see if you have emails and give them back. She then tasked her lawyers to engage in this review process of that 60-some thousand and make that cut. And then was asked by her lawyers at the end, do you want us to keep the personal emails? And she said, I have no use for them anymore. It's then that they issued the direction that the technical people delete them.
Do you think Mrs. Clinton knew that the technical people were erasing these emails so that even your top technical experts could recover them?
Based on my sense now of her technical sophistication, I don't think so.
You don't think the lawyers told her that that's what they were doing, erasing all these emails that everybody on this committee wanted to look at?
Yeah, and I'm sure we've asked this.
What type of lawyer wouldn't tell their client they were doing that? But
I don't think they. I think our evidence from our investigations, they did not. That they asked her, "Do you want to keep them?" And they said no, and they said, "Wipe them away."
Okay. Now, as I understand it, the goal was just to erase personal emails, but you've recovered emails that wouldn't be considered personal emails at all.
Correct.
Okay. I don't know that you didn't recover them, but based upon the emails that you recovered, presumably her lawyers or somebody was going well beyond personal emails, is it possible we'll never be able to recover emails that dealt with the Clinton Foundation or dealt with the Benghazi scandal? Is it possible because of what her lawyers did that they were erasing things that were incriminating, maybe involving items that you yourself were not particularly investigating, but that these have now been destroyed forever?
Yes, it's possible. As I said in my statement on Tuesday, we did not find evidence to indicate that they did the erasure to conceal things of any sort. But it's possible, as I said on Tuesday, that there are work-related emails that were in the batch that were deleted.
How did the Department of Justice, or how did the FBI view the incident in which Hillary Clinton instructed Jake Sullivan to take the markings off of a document that was to be sent to her?
Yeah, we looked at that pretty closely. There was some problem with their secure fax machine, and there's an email in which she says, in substance, take the headers off of it and send it as a non-paper. As we've dug into that more deeply, we've come to learn that... at least there's one view of it that is reasonable, that a non-paper in State Department parlance means a document that contains things we could pass to another government. So essentially take out anything that's classified and send it to me. Now, it turned out that didn't happen because we actually found that the classified fax was then sent, but that's our best understanding of what that was about.
So this was a classified fax?
Correct.
So Hillary Clinton sends to Jake Sullivan. Let me go back. Jake Sullivan says, they say they had issues sending secure fax. They're working on it. Hillary Clinton sends to Jake Sullivan, if they can't, turn into non-paper with no identifying heading and send non-secure. Yeah. So you're telling me it's a classified piece of information. She's taking off the header, and she's instructing them to send it in a non-secure format. Is that not intent?
Well, that actually caught my attention when I first saw it. And what she explained to us during our interview was, and other witnesses did as well, is what she meant by that is make it into a non-classified document. That's what a non-paper is in their world, and send it to us. Because I don't need the classified stuff. I just need the...
Then why take off the heading? If it's going to be turned into a non-classified document, why take off the heading?
I assume because it would be non-classified anymore, so you wouldn't have a classified header on it. I think is what she said during our interview.
So she wanted to be technically correct? Is that what you're saying? That you're?
No, I think what she said during the interview is, I was telling him, in essence, send me an unclassified document. Take the header off, turn it into a non-paper, which is a term I never heard before, but I'm told by people I credit that in diplomatic circles that means something we can pass to another government.
You are very generous in your accepting of that. Let me ask you, Director, did any uncleared individuals receive any classified information over Hillary Clinton's server?
Did any uncleared people receive classified information? I don't think any of the correspondents on the classified emails were uncleared people. These were all people with clearances working, doing State Department business on the unclass system.
Did Mr. Pagliano have the requisite security clearance?
As I sit here today, I can't remember. He was not a participant on the classified email exchanges, though.
But he was running the server. He set it up.
That's a different question. I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question then. Yeah, there's no doubt that uncleared people had access to the server, because even after Pagliano, there were others who maintained the server who were private sector folks.
So there are hundreds of classified documents on these servers. How many people, without a security clearance, had access to that server?
I don't know the exact numbers. I sit here. It's probably more than 2, less than 10.
I appreciate your willingness to follow up with this. Did Secretary Clinton's attorneys have the security clearances needed?
They did not.
Does that concern you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Is there any consequence to an attorney rifling through Hillary Clinton's emails without a security clearance?
Well, not necessarily criminal consequences, but there's a great deal of concern about an uncleared person not subject to the requirements we talked about in the read-in documents potentially having access. That's why it's very, very important for us to recover everything we can back from attorneys.
So what's the consequence? I mean, here, Hillary Clinton gave direction to her attorneys without a security clearance to go through documents that were classified.
I think that's what happened in fact. Whether that was the direction is a question I can't answer sitting here.
So you're parsing that one a little bit for me.
No, you were just asking me. I don't
What's the consequence? They don't work for the government. We can't fire them.
Right.
So is there no criminal prosecution of those attorneys? Should they lose their bar license? What's the consequence to that?
Well, if they acted with criminal intent or acted with some malintent.
What you're telling us is it doesn't matter if you have a security clearance or not. Because I may be innocent enough. Hey, I'm just an attorney. I like the secretary. I'm trying to help Hillary Clinton. I'm not trying to give it to the Chinese or the Russians. I'm just trying to help her. So there's no intent? It doesn't matter if these people have security clearances?
Of course it matters. That's why I said that.
But there's no consequence, Director. There's no consequence.
Well, I don't know what consequence you'd have in mind. Very
prosecute them.
An attorney for receiving from his client information that ends up being classified.
I asked you at the very beginning, is there a reasonable expectation that Hillary Clinton would send and receive, if not daily, hourly, if not daily, classified information? That's reasonable to think that the Secretary of State would get classified information at every moment. She's not the head of Fish and Wildlife. So the idea that she would turn over her emails, her system, her server to what it sounds like up to 10 people without security clearances, and there's no consequence. So why not do it again?
That's a question I don't think you should put to me. You're asking, I'm talking about my criminal investigation.
But how can that, there's no intent there? Does she not understand that these people don't have security clearances?
Surely she understands at least some of them don't have security clearances.
So if she understands they don't have security clearances, and it's reasonable to think she's going to be in classified information, is that not intent to provide a non-cleared person access to classified information?
You're mixing it up, though. I don't think it's reasonable to assume, mixing me up, sorry, it's not your fault, that someone who is maintaining your server is reading your emails. In fact, I don't think that's the case here. There's a separate thing, which is when she's engaging counsel to comply with the State Department's request, are her lawyers then exposed to information that may be on there that's classified? So,
and did they see any classified information? Did Hillary Clinton's attorneys, without security clearances, see classified information?
I don't know the answer to that.
It has to be yes, Director. You came across 110, and they said they went through all of them.
Well, they didn't read them all. They just looked at
headers. So their excuse is, we saw the emails, but we didn't read them?
No, I think I said this in my statement on Tuesday. They sorted the emails by using headers and search terms to try and find work-related emails. We read them all.
I know that you read them all. Do you think it's reasonable or unreasonable to think that her attorneys, under her direction, did or did not read those emails? Because there were, let me go back to this, yes or no. Were there or were there not classified emails that that Hillary Clinton's attorneys read?
I don't know whether they read them at the time.
Did Hillary Clinton give non-cleared people access to classified information?
Yes. Yes.
What do you think her intent was?
I think then was to get good legal representation and to make the production to the State Department. I think it would be a very tall order in that circumstance. I don't see the evidence there to make a case that she was acting with criminal intent in her engagement with her lawyers.
And I guess I read in criminal intent as the idea that you allow somebody without a security clearance access to classified information. Everybody knows that, Director. Everybody knows that.
I want to clear up some things. I want to make sure I understand exactly what you testified to on the issue of whether Secretary Clinton sent or received emails that were marked as classified. On Tuesday, you stated, and I quote, only a very small number of the emails containing classified information bore markings, and I emphasize, bore markings, indicating the presence of classified information, end of quote. Republicans have pounced on this statement as evidence that Secretary Clinton lied. But today we learned some significant new facts, and I hope the press listens to this. First, you clarified that you were talking about only three emails out of 30,000 your office reviewed. Is that right?
Three, yes.
Three out of 30,000. Is that right?
Yes, at least 30,000.
At least 30,000. Second, you confirmed that these three emails were not properly marked as classified at the time based on federal guidelines and manuals. They did not have a classification header. They did not list the original classifier, the agency, office of origin, reason for classification, or date for declassification. Instead, these emails included only a single, quote, C, parenthesis, in parenthesis, and then end of quotation mark for confidential on one paragraph lower down in the text. Is that right?
Correct.
Third, you testified that based on these facts, it would have been a, quote, reasonable inference for Secretary Clinton to, quote, immediately, end of quote, conclude that these emails were not, in fact, classified. So that was also critical new information. But there's one more critical fact, that these emails were not in fact, and that is this, Director, and to the press, these emails were not in fact classified. The State Department explained to us yesterday, they reported that these emails are not classified and that including the little C
on these emails was a result of a human error. The bottom line is that those little C's should not have been on those documents because they were not, in fact, classified. When Representative Watson Coleman asked you a few minutes ago about this, you testified that you had not been informed. And I understand that. I'm not beating up on you, I promise you. But can you tell us why, Director Coleman? Because I want, you know, because the Republicans are pouncing saying that the Secretary lied. And so I want to make sure we're clear on this. Can you tell us why, Director Coleman, did you consult, and we're just curious, did you consult with the State Department about these three emails out of the more than 30,000? Or did this just not come up? What happened there?
Yeah, I'm not remembering for sure while I'm here. I'm highly confident we consulted with them and got their view on it. I don't know about what happened yesterday. Maybe that their view has changed or they found things out that we didn't know. But I'm highly confident we consulted with them about it.
So this is totally different than what we understood yesterday. Today we learned that these emails were not, in fact, classified. They should not have been included. They should have not included those stray markings. They were not properly marked as classified, and the director of the FBI believes it was reasonable for Secretary Clinton to assume that these documents were not classified. Going on, let me move to the next topic. You explained on Tuesday that you were providing, quote, an update on FBI's investigation of Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email system during her time as Secretary of State. You explained that you received a referral on this matter from the Inspector General of Intelligence Community on July 6, 2016. Is that right?
Yes.
Today, tens of thousands of Secretary Clinton's emails are publicly available on the State Department's website. And our staff have been reviewing the emails that were retroactively determined to include classified information. Based on this review, it appears that these emails included more than 1,000 individuals who sent or received the information that is now redacted as classified. Let me make that clear. About 1,000 people sent or received the same information that was contained in Secretary Clinton's emails and retroactively classified. Were you aware of that?
No, the number doesn't surprise me, though.
Why not?
Because this was, they were doing the business of the State Department on this email system. So I don't know how many thousands of people work at the State Department, but it doesn't surprise me there'd be lots of people on these chains.
Would you agree that we need to, that something needs to be done with regard to this classification stuff? Because things are classified, then they're not classified, then they are retroactively classified. And, I mean, does that go into your consideration when looking at a case like this?
Yeah, I don't pay much attention to the up-classified stuff because we're focused on intent. So if someone classifies it later, it's impossible that you formed intent around that because it wasn't classified at the time. I know that's a process. I wasn't familiar with it before this investigation, but I don't spend a lot of time focused on it in the course of a criminal investigation.
I understand. We also reviewed who these people are. And they include a host of very experienced career diplomats with many years of experience. So let me ask you this. When you received this referral from the Inspector General about Secretary Clinton's emails, did you also receive any referrals for any of the other 1,000 people who sent and received those emails? Did you?
No.
I understand.
Well, I should stop there. Within the scope of our investigation was a group of people closer to the secretary. We looked at their conduct. Probably, I forget what the number is, four or five of them. But then the hundreds of others who may have been on the chains were not the subjects of the investigation.
I think I have 30 more seconds. I understand that Secretary Clinton is the only one running for president, but it does not make sense that she was singled out for a referral to the FBI. Do you agree with that?
I don't think I agree with that.
Okay, let's go back to Colin Powell. Do you think you ought to look at his situation? Or Condoleezza Rice?
Well, there's been no referral on them. I know only sort of a superficial level their circumstances. This case strikes me as very different from those and not an inappropriate referral from the Inspector General.
Very well.
Who was Hillary Clinton emailing that was hacked?
Yeah, I don't want to say in an open forum. We can get you that information, but I don't want to, again, I don't want to give any hostile adversaries insight into who what we figured out.
Fair enough.
So I know the names.
I understand. Was there any evidence of Hillary Clinton attempting to avoid compliance with the Freedom of Information Act?
That was not the subject of our criminal investigation, so I can't answer that sitting here.
It's a violation of law, is it not?
Yes, my understanding is there are civil statutes that apply to that. I don't know of a...
So let's put the boundaries on this a little bit. What you didn't look at. You didn't look at whether or not there is an intention or the reality of noncompliance with the Freedom of Information Act.
Correct.
You did not look at testimony that Hillary Clinton gave in the United States Congress, both the House and the Senate.
To see whether it was perjurious in some respect?
Yes.
No, we did not.
Did you review and look at those transcripts as to the intent of your recommendation?
I'm sure my folks did. I did not.
So, okay, and this is an important point, because I think those of us in Congress, knowing that you got a criminal referral from an inspector general, thought that you were also looking at whether or not Hillary Clinton had provided false testimony, which is a crime, to the Congress. But you didn't look at that.
Correct. As I said, I'm confident my folks looked at the substance of the statements, trying to understand the circumstances around the entire situation.
Can you confirm that?
Confirm that. But and also, again, maybe I'm missing this, but I don't think we got a referral from congressional committees, a perjury referral.
No, it was the inspector general that initiated this. Yeah. Did the fact that Hillary Clinton refused to be interviewed by the inspector general, what did that say to you about intent?
Not, at least for our criminal investigation, not particularly germane.
Are you familiar? There's a website. I mean, lots of government agencies have websites. The State Department has a website, state.gov. And they have a YouTube site. Videos that are uploaded to a YouTube site, would those be considered federal records?
I don't know.
So they're paid for by federal dollars. They're maintained by federal employees. Would that not be a federal record?
Yeah, I just don't know. I'm sure there's an expert who could answer that in 2 seconds, but I'm not that expert.
Okay. We've kept you here a long time. I want to follow up on that. Is the FBI still investigating Hillary Clinton's aides?
No, is the answer. The Department of Justice declined on all of those who were subjects communicating with her through that email system.
What recommendations did you make about her aides?
Same. We didn't recommend that anybody be prosecuted on those facts.
And if you can help us understand who precisely had been ruled out for prosecution, that would be...
Sure.
Did you look at the Clinton Foundation?
I'm not going to comment on the existence or non-existence of any other investigations.
Was the Clinton Foundation tied into this investigation?
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that.
The server that was set up in her home was originally set up by, you said, former President Bill Clinton.
Correct.
Do you know who paid for that?
I don't, sitting here.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Thanks this week to Quinta Jurecic, who heroically edited that audio so you don't have to listen to the whole thing. Our music, as ever, is performed by Ms. Sophia Yan, who always asks,
false exculpatory statements, they are used for what?
I want to thank everyone who has taken the time to rate the Lawfare Podcast, tweet about the Lawfare Podcast, share on Facebook the Lawfare Podcast. If you haven't been one of those people, become one, because they're a model of humanity. Thanks for listening.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.